before we even begin to discuss the Maamkavos themselves, we'll discuss the name of the topic. The name of the shiur is, can you ever move Muktzah? So there was a big question in shul when I was discussing with some of the men about what the precise topic was going to be. So the question was, what punctuation mark is supposed to be at the end of that statement? But that's supposed to be a question, that's supposed to be an exclamation point, it's supposed to be a period, a comma. So I thought it was supposed to be a question mark. So somebody sent me that. I have no idea what should have said that. No, in journalism, if you put a question mark at the end, that's a way of saying it's not really going to be true. Is that true? I don't know if it's true. I have no idea. So I said, let's make an exclamation point, make it like really exciting. So apparently that fell flat and nobody did this. Okay, so we're not really sure what the name of the top of the shiur is, but we are going to try to discuss actually some potential scenarios of really moving Muktzah. So of course the starting point is, of course you can't move Muktzah, but never get Muktzah. Not so simple. Maybe certain situations that arise that you may be permitted to move Muktzah. Now this is a little bit of a throwback to the last year, although I think the last year was in June. So we can definitely review. Way back before the summer, we spoke about categories of things that are not really Muktzah in the first place. We spoke about moving the pencils, the hammers, things that are not technically Muktzah, but we colloquially call them Muktzah, they're not really Muktzah. They're really what's called the Kli Shemalachta L'Issa, which means the utensil that's used for prohibited purposes on Shabbos. So you can't just at whim just move pencils or hammers, but you can move them if they're in the way. Let's say I'm about to set my Shabbos table and I realize I left a hammer there, or I'm about to put down my safe and there's a pencil out of the way, so I'm committed to move that item out of the way, that's perfectly okay. That's called the Tzorech Mekomo. Or, let's say I need the hammer for some permissible use, I need the hammer to crack another substance, that's okay, because those items are not really Muktzah per se. When we talk about real Muktzah, what we're talking about is items that are not really kalim, they're not even really utensils, such as money is real Muktzah, a rock is real Muktzah, raw food, inedible food is real Muktzah. Those things are really, really Muktzah. Certain kinds of utensils that are very expensive utensils, let's say a cell phone, a computer, things that people would get very, very upset about, somebody kind of moves around for non-essential purposes. So those are also potentially real Muktzah. So we're going to limit today's discussion to real bona fide Muktzah. Again, money, rocks, sticks, you know, things of that nature. So are there any grounds ever to permit the moving of those kinds of things? Let's take a look at the first of the sources, where the Shulchan Aruch begins to tell us the following. The Shulchan Aruch, the first of the sources in Aruch Chaim, tells us, Shachach Eben Api Chavis. A person forgot a rock on top of a barrel. Well, he has a barrel of wine, so that's okay. You can move a barrel of wine. There's a rock. And the rock is the ultimate most. Omos, or he forgot money. He left some, a couple of dollar bills that are laying around. Alakar, on top of a pillow, on his bed. So he has a real Dovash Muktzah that's really in the way, it's really bothering him. He really wants to get to that barrel of wine, he really wants to use that pillow. But since we're not dealing with just a pencil or a hammer, we're dealing with a real Muktzah, we cannot take the attitude, no problem, just move it out of the way and call it a day. No, not so simple at all. What you can do is as follows. Mate chavis al tzida for ha'eben ofelis. You can tip the barrel over, thereby causing the Dabash HaMuktzah to kind of fall off by itself. Or menara kar, where you can shake the pillow, gamos noflim, and the money will fall onto the ground. So this is the first heter, important heter of HaMuktzah. It's called ni'ur. Ni'ur is literally to shake. So I need the ice, I need the Dabash HaMuktzah, I need the bed to lay down, I need the barrel to drink from. The only way for you to get the Muktzah off is to shake off the Muktzah, so I'm not touching the Muktzah. And that's the goal, that's the key. I didn't touch anywhere near the Muktzah. I'm playing with the item that's permissible, shaking and moving in such a way that the Muktzah tips off by itself. That's okay. That's called Ni'ur. However, that's not always practical. The Moitzah Chav is Ben Achavios. What if you have a lot of barrels together? The Inyash and the Yochel Hathos of Sabim Koma. There's no way for you just to tip the barrel to get the stone off. You know what's going to happen if you do that? The stone's going to smash into another barrel and break the other barrel. That's not an option. Well, let's say, for example, very common, the Dabash HaMuktzah that's sitting on your pillow happens to be something very, very expensive, and it's not the most practical thing just to tip it over. I have my cell phone. I guess it does have my it's a funny thing. I have the outer box or something in case it doesn't have that. So I have my cell phone sitting on my pillow, and I realize I want to go lay down and shop. It's not a big problem. I can't take the attitude, well, this is just a hammer or a pencil because the cell phone is very expensive. and therefore it's elevated to the category of real mitzvah. So I can't just pick it up and put it down, and I don't really have an option of just flipping it over. Because if I flip it over onto the floor, it's going to fall onto the floor and break. So what do I do? So here the Shulchan Aruch gives us a second option. It's right out of the Gemara of the Shabbos. Shulchan Aruch says what you're allowed to do is as follows. You're allowed in the third line, the first source, Yacholai b'ya kemoshi ima evan namachal acher, la tosa sham, kadesh yupo me'alehem. What you're allowed to do is as follows. I can pick up the pillow, thereby carrying the muktzah. We think about astonishing, amazing, I'm moving muktzah. Well, what's the, why is this mutter? What's the source of this? I'm not really moving the muktzah. What I'm really moving is the pillow. The muktzah is schlepping along with it. I can take the pillow over to a safe place. I'll bring it over to some other big bed or something, a place where I can comfortably, without just smashing myself up the smithereens, I can comfortably dump it onto somewhere where it's not going to break. And that's perfectly okay. So what I just did was, I carried the muktzah. Unlike the first case, where all I did was tilt the muktzah, here I'm carrying the muktzah, but since I'm not touching the muktzah directly, I'm carrying the muktzah to do something else. That's what's called in halacha, a very important phrase called tiltul min hatzad. Min hatzad literally means the side. So we'll give it, see if we can give an example. I don't know if I really want to act it out with this. I mean, we'll do it with my wallet, all right? So let's say all of a sudden I'm about to sit down on this chair. And Shabbos, the only chair around. Oh my goodness, there's a wallet here. Ah, it's a mamish, there's money in it. So what do I do? Best option? Option number one, that's called New York. Now what if, that's not an option. It's going to break, it's going to fall, it's going to help. So what I can do is as follows. I can pick up the chair, even though I am carrying the muktzah, but I'm not touching the muktzah. Well, tilt the minatzad. It's called the tzorech dabra muktzah, because I need the chair. And then I can walk it over to wherever I want to place it, tilt it over, do mirror, and that's also okay. So okay, option number one is mirror. If mirror is not practical, then you can do tilt the minatzad, provided that you really need the dabra muktzah. Yes?
I thought there's something called
blessed. You thought 100% correct, okay? Next line is Shulchan Aruch. Come to Shulchan Aruch, it says that when is all this true? Following exception. However, what if a person put the wallet on the bed intentionally on Friday afternoon so that it should be there for Shabbos? The person put the cell phone down on the chair, on the pillow, to leave it there for Shabbos, then all bets are off. It's exactly 100% right. This is what's called the halacha of bosses. With Dabra, also Basis Libulia base. If you take a Dabra Mutta, you take a chair, which is a permissible item, and you use it as a base to support an item of Mukta, that chair, believe it or not, becomes Mukta. So, I want you to tell me a story. You carry the chair because you're not touching the Mukta. Wrong. You're touching the Mukta. You know what the new Mukta is? The new Mukta is the chair. The chair just became Mukta because it's a Basis Libulia also. Now, Basis Libulia also only applies if it was done intentionally. If I planned on putting it there, and now in the middle of Shabbos, I changed my mind, I want to get rid of it, that's called the buses, then I'm not allowed to move. 99.9% of the times of our shaylas, we don't have buses. Why? Because usually there's another hook to the place. Why is it there? Because I forgot it. I forgot to remove it when Shabbos started. I didn't plan it to be there.
So if I have my matches and I open up the drawer, and I'm about to light them, and then I put them away, and I leave the drawer open, and I light.
So that drawer may become right. That may be a buses problem. That's right.
Okay.
Sure,
buses, like if you have other stuff.
Oh, wait. It's a maybe. So we have to next one. Okay. So again, let's make sure we have the rules straight. The basic halacha is that if I'm not really touching the muktzah and I need the area or I need a place, I'm allowed to move the muktzah, quote unquote, move the muktzah, even though it's muktzah mamish, provided that I did either niur or I did tiltum and atzah. However, what trumps all of the above is if the item that the muktzah is resting on just itself was transformed to become muktzah, that's a basis. Once it's a basis, it'll get better off. Then I can't move the basis, so now I have a real problem. So the real question you have to always ask yourself is this a basis or is it not a basis? I have my wallet on the table. Is the table a basis or not a basis? I have my cell phone on the chair. Is it a basis or not? I have the rock on my pillow. Is it a basis or not? What does that depend upon? So one of the factors it depends upon is kavana, intent. Did I plan on putting it there? Or did I just kind of forget about it? That's factor number one. Factor number two is, take a look at the second resources. Kli she'yesh alav, davra aser vid davra hamutar. What if I have an item that has multiple things on it? So I have a table, I have a drawer, I have a desk, I have a suitcase. There's a lot of things in it. Some of the things are muktzah, and some of the things are not muktzah. So I can see this happening, very, very common. I have a suitcase. Some people are going to go away for Shabbos, some people like to unpack, some people don't like to unpack. And I got a lot of things in the suitcase. I have my wallet in the suitcase, and my cell phone in the suitcase. And then I have my other shirts in the suitcase. So is that a bosses? Is it a suitcase? Yes, a bosses, not a bosses. So here it depends. Klishation of Dover also been Dover. I'll tell you a few more extra sources. Okay, here we go. I have a utensil, second of the sources. I have a utensil that has a Dover Shal Muktzah and a permissible item. Muktzah Talmud, then it's okay. And then the Shulchan Aruch gives you a couple of realistic examples back in the Middle Ages, not relevant for us. But we can just skip to the third line, the end of the line. When do we say that it's not a basis? If the permissible item is more important than the prohibited item. And however, if it's the other way around, then you have a problem. So again, so two factors in determining whether we have a basis problem. If you have kavana, you intended to leave it there, that's a potential basis issue. Even with kavana, if you have other items that are permissible, then you're okay. How do you determine whether something is permissible or prohibited? It all depends upon what's more important to you. How do you determine whether something is important to you? How would you make that call? Do you think a cell phone is more important, or do you think a safe is more important? What factors would go into, what characteristics would you use to determine whether something is more important than that?
Well, on Shabbos, it's like if you want to use it.
Very excellent, so correct. That let's say I have an item that I'm planning on using with Shabbos. I want to use this the safer. Now it could be the safer may only be like $2, the cell phone costs $300, but the cell phone's worthless for me at Shabbos. So the safer is automatically more important. But the other thing, what if it's a safer that I wasn't planning on using with Shabbos? So now I can't say that, well, I was planning on using it, so then how do you determine what's more important? The answer is, there's only one other way to determine what's more important. Never. But what? Based on how much it costs. The bottom line is what does it cost? So if the cell phone is more expensive than the unwanted, unwanted safer, so then it turns out that the cell phone is the more important item, and now you just have a bosses problem. So these all things you gotta go through your mind. Any time you have any item sitting on top of another mutter, you have to always ask yourself, yeah, bosses, no bosses. Who knows what's the most common example of bosses or anti-bosses that we have? The old candlestick story. So many, many women have the practice of lighting candles on the table per se. So we have that minute, beautiful, wonderful minute, but it is fraught with potential halakhic danger and physical danger. The little kids around playing that is the best idea. But in terms of halakhic potential problems, it's as follows. If you put your candles on the table, you may have made your entire table into one big bosses. Now, that itself wouldn't be so terrible, provided you're not planning on moving the table. But if you do plan on picking up the table and moving it around the Shabbos, which many people do sometimes, or you may want to take off the tablecloth, you may want to do things in that table, you have a potential bosses problem. The only way to make sure you don't have a bosses problem is to make sure that there's something on that table that is more important than, and this is a really, really tricky one, more important than the what? How do you finish that sentence? More than the... What's the real muktzah on candles? The candle sticks are not really muktzah. The candles may not be real muktzah. The fire is the muktzah. The flame is the muktzah. So you have to find something to be on your table more expensive or more important than a flame. Let's think of something. What could you possibly put on your table? The challah down, the kiddush cup down, the sefer, anything that you're going to use on Shabbos will automatically out the way the muktzah part, and that could potentially salvage your table. Now, how long does that davar muktzah have to be there? When is the key moment of time when muktzah kicks in? When Shabbos starts. The period we call Ben HaShemashim. So when the time from when the sun sets and the stars come out at the beginning of Shabbos, that's going to make or break whether the item is muktzah. So that's why many people have the custom, those people who do light candles on the table, should have the practice of something else doing on the table. Should put the challah down, put the kiddush cup, put something down, since you can use the Shabbos, put down to avoid any potential issues in terms of the books.
Does it have to put down first?
No, as long as it's there when Shabbos starts. As long as when Tav Shkia comes, there's a number of books, there's a number of books, that's fine. Okay, so again, so let's just review for a second. So we started by talking about those items that are not real books, so like the kalim of last week's share, 3 months ago share, 5 months ago share, the kalim that are not real, looks like the pencils and the hammers, those can be moved just at whim if you need the area. Things that are real muksa, such as wallets, money, rock, stones, those kinds of things, cannot be moved. Raw food, we said, cannot be moved, even if it's in the way. It can only be moved if either you're not literally moving, you're just tilting something and just causing it to fall to the floor, or if it's too risky to have it fall, causing it to break, it's in the way, so then you can actually pick up the permissible item and walk it away, and then dump it onto wherever you want to dump it. That's called near, i.e. then tilt over atzad. And all of this is only true, provided that the permissible item did not become a bosses. If it became a bosses, then you're up the creek. How does it not become a bosses? Depends on the two factors that we said, intent and value, in terms of whether it is or not.
How would that apply if you have candles on a tablecloth and you want to change the tablecloth? Like, how would you do that properly then?
You want to not pick up the candlesticks themselves.
You want to change, yeah.
If the fire's out, want to pick up the candlesticks. So the truth is that the candlesticks themselves may not really be, that's a tricky thing. The question is, what exactly are the candlesticks? Are the candlesticks themselves considered to be a buses to the flame? So the candlesticks themselves may be a problem. That's going to be a tricky one, right?
You know, people usually light on a tray, light on a tray.
Right, so if you light on the tray, this gets also tricky. If you light on the tray, then it would be a good idea to put something that's mutter on the tray to prevent the tray from becoming mutter, and then you'll be able to pick up the whole tray and don't open outside. So for this and many, many other reasons that we don't like candles on the tray. Okay?
What if there's the mutter item is on cannot be moved? So let's say it's on the floor, or let's say it's on a couch. If we once left a musical instrument on the couch, like just unintentionally, like it was just there, and it would have taken up a large portion of the couch, and then...
So that's your problem, because the musical instrument itself may very well be a cliche malachalisa, but more than just a sarkis, it's an expensive item, so then it would be booked to Amish. And although the couch is probably not buses, because you might need to leave it there, but bottom line is how you can get the...
You can't, like, tilt the couch, really.
Well, we tilt the couch and break the instrument. Yeah. So that's not a good idea. So you have to pick up the couch and move the couch. So
find out. Leave there all
time. Unless you can follow and figure out another stuff that we would have to come up with the third of the source. Okay. So I have my thing in Muktiya.
When you're saying to put something like the collar or sit around the table so that doesn't become a buses, does it matter if you take that off while the candles are still lit? Like the whole time the candles are lit, that
Well, as long as it was on during the period of Banish Mushrooms, then you're okay.
So even if you finish your challah and the candles are still burning,
right,
it's
that's
already
okay. That'll be okay,
established.
Right. Once the candles go out, then the table can be moved. Right? Okay.
Sorry, I'm just not clear. So the buses go all the way down, like the candles stay to the tray.
So let's come with some coolers. We can't have a lot of coolers here.
So does it matter? You mentioned this. Let's say you don't have an intent to put something on it, but you did. Does it matter when you did it? Say you did it like 3 seconds before Shabbos, you just like dumped something on the chair.
Oh, that's a good question. When we say intent to put, does that mean I put it there because I really want it here, or does it mean I put it there because I could have put it somewhere else also? Just I wasn't even thinking about it. It's not like I forgot. I know that I did it, but I didn't intentionally place it in that place specifically. That's a big machlokes. Is that really considered to be a bus or not? You know, we have the most serious shot of this is in a suitcase. You can't forget a suitcase. Person Friday afternoon, so they're rearranging the suitcase. They just came to Shabbos, so they're sticking their wallet over here. The wallet on top of their shirt or something in the suitcase. Is the shirt a bus or not? Depends on your shot, right? Because I put the wallet on top of the shirt. I knew exactly what I was doing. It's not like I forgot. I put it there. On the other hand, there's no purpose of having a wallet on top of a shirt. I could have put it on top of another shirt also if that was the thing on top. So it happened just coincidentally. That was the thing that was there. So now I want to know on Shabbos, can I pick up the shirt, tilt the wallet off, and wear the shirt? So if you're machmir in that shayla, so then the shirt is a buses. If you hold it, that's not called a buses because there was nothing specific about the shirt that made it a buses. That would be okay. So your shayla is a trivial question, but you could probably make it a shayla.
It doesn't matter if it's there for 5 minutes before Shabbos or 3 days before Shabbos.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. What matters is what your intent is.
But again, the buses, the shirt itself is double mutter and something that's kosher.
No, it does not. There's nothing else on the shirt unless there are other things on the shirt also.
It's not the shirt itself.
If the shirt, that doesn't
matter. Yeah, but see, what Chip is saying, she's asking before, the shirt is in a suitcase. Isn't the suitcase a buses?
So the shirt may first become a basis, but the suitcase may not become a basis because the suitcase has other drama on the Torah with it. So it has your socks, it has your undershirts, and other things that you need for Shabbos. So the suitcase may not become, but the shirt has only one thing on it. The only thing that's sitting on top of the shirt is the wall. So you gotta be careful when you rearrange your suitcase. You know, that will come back as interesting.
You can have the suitcase and not have the suitcase, like, if you really need
the shirt. Right, in theory, right. Yeah, that's a good messy thing to do, right? Okay. All right, anyway, so we finished the chumash, how many small kulas? So the third of these sources is a sweeping statement of the Ramah, a very, very important thing to be aware of in terms of moving muhtza. That's what we're going to skip to the third line of the Ramah. The third of the sources. You can blow muhtza. Right? You can blow muhtza if you want to, and that's great, assuming that the muhtza is blowable. If it's a 6-pound rock or a cell phone or a tuba that's sitting on your couch, that's not going to work too well. Why is blowing muhtza okay? Listen, why? The lo avi tiltul ela kele achayad v'lo mikri tiltul. Because it's an abnormal way of moving. You generally don't move things by blowing them. And anything that's done kele achayad is permissible in the muhtza. That is a huge kula. That is a tremendous, significant leniency. This is what we basically call tiltul begufa. If I move muktzah in a way using other parts of my body that are not normally associated with moving things in that way, that's not called a violation of muktzah. This becomes very, very helpful with the kicking things. Let's say a very, very common shadow. Let's say some package you have to live at your house on Shabbos. But assuming the package is muktzah, it's not even clear that it's really the muktzah. Let's say if I was in worst case scenario, it's an item that you really know is muktzah. It's sitting there on the porch, and we just heard on the news that there are 90,000 UPS things that are Amazon packages that are stolen in 1 month in New York City. You heard that? That's the thing. 90,000. You know, 90,000 people ordered things. 90,000 packages were stolen. So you don't want to be one of those victims. So you want to move that muktzah to the other end. What's the heter? It's muktzah. It's not heter to move it. Because you get lost. That's not a heter. So the heter says the only way to do it is to be kiliyakiyatumagufa. You can somehow maneuver, kick it. And, you know, step up, jump. You get it. Blow, kick, elbows on the heads and knees, and try to get that double muktzah up till the roof. That would technically be permissible. Why is that permissible? What kind of kula is this? So the truth is, not everybody even accepts this kula. But why we generally follow this kula? Why does this kula even make sense? Let's pull it out. So many suggest it's based on the following. One of the reasons why Chazal looked at books in the first place, there are many, many reasons. Some of you may remember back 6 months ago when we first introduced muktzah. There are many, many reasons why muktzah was prohibited. But one of the reasons is that it was a gezeira. It was a decree to prevent people from carrying things just unnecessarily on Shabbos. Why? A mindset of Shabbos is not to be carried, because carrying is awesome. One of the 11 principal office. Now, we're so out of that mindset because we've all grown up in the era, so like the whole world has changed. But if you ask people from the last generation, I guess I'll view myself as part of the last generation, I grew up in that era until I was almost a teenager with no era where we lived. So, today's world will talk to explain to the kids that you're not allowed to carry on Shabbos. But the starting point is, of course you're not allowed to carry on Shabbos. Of course you're not allowed to carry anything outside on Shabbos. So now Chazal was very, very nervous. Because if people get into the habit of moving everything, they don't think about what they're picking up. So people are going to be carrying right and left. That's going to lead to a laxity in terms of carrying. So Chazal said, every time you touch anything on Shabbos, think of it. You have to be in that mindset, that Shabbos mindset. I can't just stop and touch things on Shabbos. Just stop. It's going to be the Shabbos mode of carrying. Muktzah helps you get into that Shabbos mindset of not picking up everything. If the whole gezeira, one of the reasons for muktzah was to prevent you from carrying, if you carry on Shabbos in an abnormal manner, guess what? That's not a malacha d'oraisa. A malacha in a Torah is only violated in a normal fashion. This is true by all malachas. Let's say, for example, you write on Shabbos. If you're a writer, you write with your left hand. You're not allowed to do that. That's only an Issa Mitterabah. It's not an Issa D'Raisa. Let's say I carry out the street where there's no Eruv. So that's not an Issa D'Raisa. If I carry it, stick it into my hat, under my arm, in my shoe or something. If I carry things in an abnormal fashion, that by definition is not down wrong to being prohibited Mitterabah. It's still Asar, but it's only prohibited Mitterabah. Therefore, since Muktzah was only instituted, according to many, as a precaution against carrying, if you remember to do the Muktzah in an abnormal fashion, that will, in a sense, defeat the purpose of the Zerah. That will accomplish that I'll never violate carrying the Raisa because I won't move things that I have to get in the first place. So, according to many, that's the rationale for this heter. So, it's an important heter to be aware of. It's the Muktzah Kaliyachayad, Muktzah Tiltul Begufa Kula. Not everybody agrees to this. Chazanish, a different reading of this halakha, he thought that there really was no intrinsic technical magufo, he based it on other things, but none of many postmen accepted this. I remember Shaila once, this goes back on Yom Kippur, this was back when I was a bacher still, when I was davening one of the commandments, it was davening in Calvin Riverdale, and it was right before Ne'ilah, and the bacher was sitting right next to me. For some reason, he noticed that there was a bill or something, a 5 or 10 or whatever it was, right on the floor. I guess it's just a tab of the whole army. Nobody noticed it, but I guess before the people were getting home. So all of a sudden, he looked down and said, oh my God, there's a $10 bill. So it was like bothering him. He looked at the $10 bill. So he turns around and he said, can I just, is it more than just to kick it, out of the way? He said, well, I won't see it anymore. So I responded to him like this. I said, maybe there's going on like 3 seconds between the two people. So I said to him, it's a machlokes harishon. It's a machlokes mishabur the chazanish. The ikra did its mutter. Come on, it's like 3 minutes for the ilo. It's not a problem. I think you might have a machlokes and all that. I just stop him. I'm going to say it with that motion. You got a little more machlokes. So it's like against the shalas differently. When you're Peter Shalas, you get a little bit nervous though. Remember, somebody was asking a shalas in the old city, Rishayim. He asked me a shalas. And, I was thinking about the shadow from there. And I was standing on the right by the roof by Yeshiva Kotel. And those who know the land, you know, you'd see the, like I spoke about the crush of the shadow, you would see the base of English. And I'm looking at the shadow, and someone's asking the shadow, it's Mutter also. And I really thought it was Mutter. I thought it was Mutter, but it was a little bit of a suffix to it. So I responded as follows. I said, if you wouldn't be asking the shadow in Bergenfield, I would have said it's Mutter. I said, but it's hard for me to say mutter when I'm staring face to face in the face and I have a little bit of a latest asophic to it. So I'm going to have to either wait for me back to Burgerfield or I'm so to over here, back to that story. So maybe you're going to be passing that mutter. This idea that you can move mutter in an abnormal fashion because basically in October you can do a lot in an abnormal fashion, this is a critical principle to be aware of. It goes way beyond mukta. I want to spend just a minute just making reference to this, because this is very, very important to look to be aware of. That's the fourth of the sources. That's the general about things coming after that. The Shulchan tells us in the fourth of the Ramakamos, Kishevachau Shabbos Achol Sheikh Sakana. When you have a situation of Achol Sheikh Sakana, there's a potential risk to life. Now, potential risk to life does not have to be a 50-50 risk, it could be a 1-in-100 risk, but even the smallest latest of suffering. If there's any possibility that you may be dealing with a life-threatening situation, so then the halacha is that you're not only committed to Michal Shabbos, you're mechuyev to be. It's a nisagom, not Michal Shabbos. You're mechuyev to Michal Shabbos. Nevertheless, mishtadlim, shelo lasos, and they akam uktan v'noshim, elai they yisrol gedol v'edas. Says the Shulchan Aruch, you should not get into the following habit and say, well, it's Shabbos. I'll ask my child to do. Bad idea. Or the Shulchan Aruch, that's my wife. Bad idea. Why is it a bad idea? Why is it a bad idea? Because then people are going to start to think, oh, we're not really supposed to be Michal Shabbos. That's why he's asking the kids to do it, or certain society. He's asking the women to do it. It's really awesome. So that's a terrible message to send. That the din is, you have to do it. You have to do it yourself. So if Ali Day Yisrael could go a little bit of the Yesh Omer, the Ramos adds this and says, that's a sender. The Evsha Lassos below Dichoy of Lo Ichoy. What if you could do it, and it's not going to delay, and it's not going to be a dangerous delay at all? You could do it in an abnormal fashion. What's the goal? What do you gain by doing it in an abnormal fashion? You just knocked it down a rung with Chil Shabbos. It's not Chil Shabbos, derai. So all it is Chil Shabbos, derabbanan, because it's done Kelach Hayad. Whatever's done at that Kelach Hayad is a lower level of Chil Shabbos. Osa Ayde Shinoi, then you should do it with the Shinoi. If you could do it for a non-Jew and it's not going to delay care, the person's not a question of life and death, you can do it idea going, then you have to do it that way. V'chein yogin. Avav amokam sheyesh locho sheitz atzel ha'akom in last death. If you think that non-Jews are going to dilly-dally and not do a good job, then you just do it yourself. So what did the Ramah just tell us? A very, very important guardian principle of Pikuach Nefesh. Pikuach Nefesh is motor, but, it's a very important but, Pikuach Nefesh is not a free-for-all. Kuchnev is not a green light, do whatever you want, Shabbos is open, no. It's Shabbos, the Chol Dovar. Whatever is necessary to be done has to be done. Whatever can be mitigated has to be mitigated. Now, the Ramah is very careful to say that you could do things in Kelach Hayad, provided that doing it in Kelach Hayad isn't going to interfere with the care of the Chol. Let's say, for example, the following Shabbos. Chmos, a person needs an emergency surgery at Shabbos. So, the doctor comes running in, with his towels on, coming out of shul, he's ready, getting ready, come to the scrub up the operating room. He says, wait a second, the remark says, you have to do things to the achayad. He's having a scalpel, hold the scalpel in my left hand. You can do the surgery to the achayad. Get a final blood surgery. Okay, that's not what the remark is talking about. Well, let's say, Lamarshal, a person realizes they have to drive on Shabbos. Why does he drive on Shabbos? Because they can't get an ambulance and they can't find an Uber. No choice, they gotta get this person to the hospital right away, the emergency room right away. So never they have to drive themselves. The guy's gonna be very, very firm. He's like, I'm also that who could have the I'm gonna hold the steering wheel with my foot, forget it. Okay, that's a wrong challenge. Because that's gonna interfere with care of a cholet and anybody else. Oh, you'll end up in the next bed in the emergency room. So clearly that's not what the Ramah's talking about. The Ramah was talking about was sometimes you have a situation, Pekuach Nefesh, where not every split second counts. So there are emergencies and there are emergencies. There are Rachim also a person having a heart attack, every second counts. Person having a baby, usually not every second counts. Person needs some stitches, usually not every second counts. Depends on the case. So when you have a Pekuach Nefesh where not every second counts, then the Ramah says, try to do it to the Achayah. Try to do an idea going, try to do it in a way that minimizes the degree of Chil Shabbos. So it's an important thing to be aware of. Very often, the types of Chil Shabbos that we have to do under these kinds of cases, making phone calls, making phone, those kind of stuff. So very often, that can easily be done Kili Achayah. There's a little bit of creativity, backs of hands, elbows, all kind of stuff could be done to do it Kili Achayah. That's what the person is supposed to try to do, to try to minimize the Chil Shabbos. Even in the case where Chil Shabbos is permissible, one is required to try to minimize it all as possible. So again, this halacha, the chizmukta, is patterned after this halacha in terms of the notion of kliyachiyat. So that is an important thing to be aware of. It could sometimes be a potential way to minimize the degree of foolishness. Let's move on now to the fifth case. Another important hetter to be aware of in terms of a chizmukta. Fifth of the Ramakabos. Kol davar mitunaf. Anything that's very dirty. We'll read it quickly. I won't elaborate on all the examples. You go, rei, v'ki, v'tsoa. You can probably figure out what probably some of these things are. The equivalents of dirty diapers and other kinds of equivalents. Beinshel adam, beinshel tarnagolim, whether they're people, little people, or chickens, whatever's causing dirty things in your house. It's a place where you're sitting, you're trying to live in the living room, and there's a filthy, dirty, smelly diaper there. Technically speaking, the diaper's mukta. There's no use, it's worthless, it's a piece of junk now, it's an absolute, it's mukta mamish. What rank do you have to take the diaper and throw it away? So the answer is, mutter lotzim la'ashva, odeis ha'kisei, v'afil v'lopli. You can just pick it up the way it is and toss it into the garbage. Why? Chazal gave you a special kula, because it's disgusting. That's exactly what the graf shorei is called. Graf shorei is literally a bedpan. These kinds of things that are just meals, that are disgusting to you, these things are permissible to move on Shabbos, even though they're outright mutter. You don't have to move in Kilei Achayah, you don't have to move a bit. The Graf Sharei is permissible. Again, one of those common examples being the diaper. Other kinds of examples, maybe they shouldn't be common, but if once in a while they do happen, so the post can point out that the Graf Sharei talks about this, about animals. General animals are mukhtar. Live animals and dead animals are generally mukhtar on Shabbos. So if there happens to be a mouse in the house, the mouse is dead or it's caught in a trap or something, so the post can write the fairish and pick up the trap and just toss it out. It's a graf shorei. People tend not to be too happy about having a mouse in the middle of the house. So whether it's alive or dead, so that's considered to be a graf shorei, and that would be permissible as well. Other kind of less graphic things, let's say there's a bug that's a very, very despicable looking bug, and you're not particularly happy having it. You can't kill it on Shabbos. You can't even trap it on Shabbos. What you can do is you can kind of escort it outside, okay? So even though with the process of escorting it outside, you may be moving it, but that's okay, because that's all graf shorei. Hoping there's an air, hoping the bug relies in the air, but you can kind of walk the bug outside, and that would be okay. However, what if these items are in a place where no one's around? Nobody's here. So you know that there's some graf, there's a dirty diaper left in your backyard, so no one's going to, if you're using the backyard, it's just you're sitting back there, it's a problem, then it's okay. But there's something dirty, smelly out in the backyard that's not bothering you at all, so then you just leave it there and finish. And if you're afraid that a kid's going to touch it, move the chazal up, please, and cover up with something. But bottom line is, graf shorei is an important tool to be aware of. We rely on it all the time, with diapers and other kinds of things. Anything that's very, 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 very disturbing, whether it's disturbing to the sight, disturbing to the to the nose, disturbance of the equilibrium of a person. There may be different degrees of what's called the graf sharei. Generally speaking, if anyone in the family can't tolerate it, so we can assume that's called the graf sharei for all members of that particular family. So you may have good standards of other members of the family as to what is a graf sharei, but the bottom line is that a normal, regular person considers that to be, it wouldn't be relevant for a bothersome sight or smell. That's called the graf sharei. Graf sharei, that would be this one.
The bug that you want to get out of your house, you can't have it even for like a minute.
Well, can't trap the bug. Unless it's proven, unless it's a shiloh. Let's say it's a bee and it's an allergic to bee, something like that. So that's a whole different thing.
And then people, you can't touch an animal. So if
someone
has a dog, you can't touch
the dog. So animals are a little tricky. So the Gemara says explicitly all animals, live animals, are all considered to be on Shabbos. There are some who wanted to suggest that maybe pets are different. Because a pet, you see, in the old days, they really have pets. Animals were farm animals, they were walking around. So those animals were moksa. But maybe if you buy an animal, the pet is almost like a toy. It's like you set it aside, it's like, yeah, play with it. So maybe that's specifically the local. So there was such a suggestion that most of us have probably been out. Okay? So again, if you ask me personally, I would say not to move. You can walk the dog in shops if there's a neighbor. Not everyone's it's a little more complicated. But to actually touch it, to play with it, pick it up, and things like that, what you really try not to do. Don't ask my kids on this one, because my kids were little back in our Shabbos, so on Shabbos, there was a family that had a dog, and everybody liked to play with the dog. All week long, including Shabbos, and one time my kids had asked me whether they could play with the dog Shabbos, I told them no, and they informed me that I can't, that their father told them that they're not allowed to play with the dog. It wasn't the most pleasant situation. But the thing is that most probably answer was
the president. So, two questions. One is, how does one actually escort without killing?
It's got
to be
like
for
the
paper?
Yeah, it's okay.
And then also, if you have garbage that's not like ma'as, it's not disgusting to you, can you move it? Can you throw it?
Right, so the garbage is usually almost like a little bit of, like, emotional. If it's smelly, it's in the way, so then it's bothering you, and then it's a grouch, all right.
But if I cut a cucumber and I'm cutting off the end with some fruit,
so then they get them.
So should just leave it?
No, I'm saying that maybe it's not talk together.
Because it
has been. Right?
So let's say you have a peel.
So it's almost like a marsha. Like if it's something that's edible, it's edible. It's not mukza. If it's not edible, that's probably just a kind of thing.
Well, like a band-aid fell off. Can I pick it up and put it in the
garbage? I don't think people like that, like band-aids sitting around the floor. I think you'd be pretty.
It's just even if it's just not appealing to
me.
I'm generally one of the coolest.
No.
So I would say that very often on Shabbos and Shul, we run into graf sharei problems. That you walk around the shul and you see a dirty tissue sitting on the floor, so that bothers me. I'm not mincha, this is a dirty tissue sitting in front of me. That's a graf sharei, I think. And let's say you have a half open chocolate bar wrapper or something that's sitting on the floor, so those are things that are not appealing. They don't walk the shul. So that's
the problem.
Depends on the things that bother you. So you have a
graf sharei person.
So then you have a graf sharei person.
Subjective.
Yeah, certainly.
But like we could sweep on
jobs. Right, so one of the reasons is because we assume that the dirt on the floor is also like brush. These things bug people, right? So things that bug people are not the most generally, which is part of the cooler of removing the garbage, taking out the garbage job, you know, there's other issues with the problem. Part of the cooler is all built on this idea of brush.
So just to clarify, the idea of blowing something or doing it in a neutral way, this downgrades it to mutter or
Durban? Yeah. No. Moving is never did.
It's always Durban.
But anyway, it's mutter. You're allowed to move, according to most folks, you're allowed to move moving to going to blow me or moving the elbows or something.
So I'm assuming the trick as an instrument would be to.
Right, if you move the elbows, so it would be mutter more. According to most folks, it would be mutter. Okay. So again, we gave a little bit of an overview, part two of mutter. Yeah, so it's important to know what things are muktzah, and then once we have things that are muktzah, what potential container exists, how to move them properly. So I can't say we finished all of the muktzah, but we gave kind of a few of them before the summer now, we gave a little bit of an overview of muktzah, so we're definitely open for suggestions. That's a show in the next couple weeks for the next topic.
Can you blow a bug after?
Can you blow?
Yeah. Mosquito can blow it out.
Well, you may have other things in the drawer that are more, say, patches and dentures and other things in there that we use a Shabbos in the drawer that doesn't become. It's not the right idea. There are other things that are more important for the Shabbos and it doesn't become.
Did we say that putting a bug on paper is not trapping it?
I don't think it's trapping it because it could, I mean, it could walk right off the paper. Or,
so you're
going
to have to get it.
Yeah, you get it on the paper and then walk outside. It's a kind of bug that's bothering you. Which will also
fit on the bottom. Anyway, that's fine.
There you have it. Okay, good. Okay. So good. That's okay.
This is the last piece of the awesome computer on the bed. He has not been able